Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
Star Trek Podcast.
My ward, Sukal, he is deeply worried about the anomaly. I do not know how to comfort him. Of course, at such a dire time, these personal feelings are of little import.
Such feelings are always of import. May I suggest, when formal meditation proves challenging, I find the peaceful routines of daily life and the joyful connection therein can help reestablish inner balance. A walk, perhaps, or a shared meal between friends. I would be pleased to join you if you'd like.
I will consider that. Thank you, Madam President.
Of course. Good luck, Mr. Saru.
All right. So, Dan, I think it is your turn this week. I've been going through the rotation. It's your turn to come up with a clever way to start the podcast.
I feel like it's arbitrary. You're not actually keeping a rotating
no,
list,
I've got
you?
I've got an Excel spreadsheet right here.
Oh, really?
Do you have all sorts of clearly labeled?
Do you also have all sorts of vital statistics on our podcast?
I keep all sorts of information on both you and Jesse at all times.
Your data, so you can data mine.
I only use it for podcast related purposes.
I think in this case, it's always you. It's
your turn to cleverly begin the podcast.
So, what do you want to discover today? Star Trek? How about an episode of Star Trek Discovery?
Okay.
What's the name of this week's episode?
It's called Rubicon.
All right.
Which is equivalent to passing the point of no return or some shit, man. Totally. But like
some Roman jokes.
It's Julius Caesar when he crossed the Rubicon with his army. His term of governorship had concluded, but instead of disbanding his armies, he took his armies across into official Roman territory.
So
tantamount to treason.
Because you didn't take the armies back to like the homeland. You kept the armies abroad in the field.
You disband that shit.
Conquered lands.
You disband that shit. So crossed the Rubicon River.
So the Oxford definitions from Oxford Language Google, which you get when you search Google Rubicon, is it inscrutable would be the right way of describing this definition. It says an act of winning a game against an opponent whose total score is less than 100, in which case the loser's score is added to rather than subtracted from the winner's.
What was the question?
What Rubicon means. That sounds like a game.
It's specific to a particular game.
Fuck that.
Oh, it's a 16th century playing trick card game for two players.
Rubicon.
I think it's
like a 16th century version of Canasta.
I don't even know.
Gin rummy.
I don't know how to. Yeah,
hearts.
It's spelled P I.
Go fish.
It's spelled P I Q U E T. It's French pronunciation.
P I Q U E T.
Is that PK?
Piquette.
Piquette. Piquette. I never know when you're supposed to do the hard end.
It's a mystifying language.
Like that. Je m'appelle Piquette.
Like that shit.
No way to.
Moet.
No. I don't know how to pronounce that.
Not mole, but mole is a good comparison because mole, it's right. Well, mole.
Tippy tippy.
Moet is that technically a champagne or is it a sparkling?
Of course, it's a sparkling wine.
It's French.
If it's not from the Champagne region of France.
Well, I know. I mean, we all know that, but I'm just saying. I'm trying to determine which it is because we don't know if it's.
Programming note to the audience: this is the It's Cast Star Trek podcast.
Prosecco.
We're in the process of getting to the Star Trek bit of the It's Cast Star Trek.
I think we'll get there eventually.
Anyways, it seems like it would be pronounced Moet because it's M O E T, but I'm pretty sure it's pronounced Moet.
But Rubicon. the name of the episode is Rubicon.
I'm still trying to figure. I guess they make a bunch of stuff.
Anyway, okay.
You're trying to say it's not important.
What I'm trying to say is we understand that in the context of this episode and its plot, that the Rubicon refers to crossing the Rubicon. In other words, the most popular version of this reference in the English language.
That's so weird that the Google's number
one. No turning back.
The Google's number one return on a Rubicon would be the rules of some fucking game.
Now, did you type in Rubicon or Rubicon?
But which fucking, Rubicon.
I just typed.
It's like a convention that takes place in Aruba.
Oh, Aruba.
It's PK.
Aruba.
Piquet or PK or Piquet.
Okay, why are we talking about Piquet again?
Because we're talking. He asked what Rubicon I was talking about. And I was telling him what Rubicon I was talking about.
Okay, I got you.
Okay. It's season four. Now that we're all in a great fucking mood.
Okay.
It's season four.
This is what Star Trek's all about, right? I can't wait till we get to the part about like overcoming, like finding compromise and
compromise to start the podcast.
Season four, episode 10, and this is podcast episode 116. I was gonna say that.
Yes, 100 is 116.
Yeah.
Episode 116 of the ISCA Star Trek podcast. Episode 9. It's episode 9 of the fourth season of Discovery.
Rubicon, Piquet, Moet. No, right. Not Moet.
Okay. All right.
Bring in summarizing.
All right. Well, you fulfilled your
somersault.
Your duty.
Patrick is actually getting a little irritated.
No, I'm not.
Okay, I'll drop it.
I'm 100% satisfied. 100% satisfied here.
I know the boundaries.
Wow, okay, I'm a little bit for flummoxed now as to what the next step is. What's the next step? I got to look
isolinium
at my podcast checklist here.
Isolinium was banned for a reason because
nobody knows what it is until this episode.
Yeah, right. Or the totally. Last episode. Yeah, it's like what the fuck is this shit? Apparently, you don't need much of it because Book was like, "There's not much of this stuff," and he's like,
"It was
you
so
only
banned
need a little."
They didn't talk about it.
Yeah.
No, and they
and it's a band.
The Tarka is all like, "Careful, yeah. Careful!" Oh, and in the meantime, while he was saying, "Be careful," but not only is that just obnoxious on its face, it's extra obnoxious when the guy who's telling you to be careful is holding the little crystal vial with the most hilariously inadequate tongs.
Yeah,
I mean, please write in and let us know if we are incorrect about this. But those tongs looked completely inadequate to the task of holding the magic crystal that holds the isolinium.
They wouldn't even. Been adequate to lift like a piece of ice to put in your fucking beverage
or an egg. Now, granted, I don't know how often people pick up a shelled egg with tongs. Now that I think of it, so I am somewhat regretting.
Would you pick up your Fabergé egg with it?
I don't have a Fabergé egg, and I'm not familiar enough with the culture.
There's a culture.
I'm sure. No doubt, there's a culture around Fabergé eggs, and I'm sadly, and disappointingly not familiar enough with it to know whether tongs are involved.
I bet it's disappointing.
Yeah, probably.
such a pretty egg.
So to talk about this Tarka saying,
you get some pretty eggs there.
This Tarka saying, "Careful thing."
Look at all my pretty eggs.
Tarka says careful. Tarka says careful twice, not once but twice.
Tarka says careful.
And it's like
twice.
It's like when you're moving a couch on a hardwood floor with someone.
Careful.
Yeah, the person keeps saying careful, careful, careful. It's like, oh really?
It's like, that's not helping at all.
Oh, be careful. Yeah. I thought I was supposed to be real fucking reckless about
it's
this
like,
shit.
Let's drop it right now.
Yeah, I thought I was supposed to break everything. Thanks for saying careful. It's like you really saved our asses, you know? And if anything, anything, saying careful is going to distract me with fury and make me less careful on accident.
On accident.
On accident.
On accident.
In my nether pants. Another, what is that when people say nother?
Another?
Druthers. No, my it's like when you say nother instead of other, it's common. We all do it.
Squirtle.
Another?
A whole nother. When people say a whole nother.
A whole nother. Yeah. All right, I got you.
But yeah, so, you know, on accident.
No,
on accident.
I'm with him.
By
I'm
accident,
I'm
is that what you,
on
are you saying
one.
By accident? Is that the proper way to say it?
I am. Accepting of all of variations of English colloquialisms.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
English, as all languages, is a malleable, evolving, adjusting, adapting language.
Yeah, but you can tell when someone's being like a dick about the English language and they shouldn't do that. Yeah.
Exactly. And I'm attempting to not
it's common.
Come it across as a dick about the English
Oh, not
language.
Saying you're being, not the accuser is being the dick. Sometimes the people who are offending the rules, even though it's a malleable, dynamic language, sometimes people are like, take it a little too far, yeah, and you're just like, come on, you. Man.
I do hear that. I do hear that, friend. I do hear that, indeed.
I have heard that.
You've heard that. So, yeah, careful is a stupid thing to say.
All right. The beginning of the episode is that bit.
And you agreed with me.
And I do.
What was Jesse, do you agree with me?
What was I agreeing with you about? The careful thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, obnoxious,
yeah.
But Tarkin, okay. They're making they want Tarkin to be obnoxious.
Yeah, that's
so
the whole
not, it's
point
not like it's a problem.
Yeah.
It's like they're accentuating. They're setting us up in this episode to be like, this guy's kind of fucking a piece of work, isn't he?
Real piece of work.
He's
that
a real
tough guy. Yeah, that fucking. Well,
so again, what's the next step on the podcasting checklist?
We
talked about that particular scene. I think we talked about the relevant things in that
Apple
scene.
Podcast.
Well, do we?
It comes at the end, Jesse.
Like and subscribe.
Hey, it's
so
fluid.
Okay, we have a choice of which direction we could go. When you said that about Tarka being painted as a dick,
yes,
it made me think of another time later in the episode when
sort
he was
of
a dick.
Choose your own adventure algorithm style.
Yeah. So do we want to jump? But the problem with going the other time he was a dick is me and we're jumping way down ahead of the plot, like some might argue prematurely, and prematurely. He was immature. But so I could jump down that route, or we could just go to kind of the next thing and keep on the summary process, what we thought, or do we want to jump to this, right to when the next time Tarka was a dick, because it's kind of related to what this is saying. Do we want to continue with the introductions? Do we want to continue with the summaries? Do we want to continue down the rotation? We haven't asked what we thought of the episode yet.
Well, according to the spreadsheet, it is your turn.
Are
this
you
week.
Okay?
am I supposed to be guiding this?
It's your turn, Dan, this week for this particular fork in the road.
Oh,
it's your,
shit. Okay.
It's your turn to pick.
Yeah,
which
okay.
One we take?
Well, then I'll just mention it real. Well, no, that's a whole other fucking, whole nother. Can
a
of worms.
Whole nother.
When you know, that whole defense system that fucking Tarka comes up
okay.
with. So
yeah.
That was some.
Yeah.
There was some things to say about that.
I have a few things to say about that.
Yeah. But do we want to jump there? Do we want to go and talk about? Well, this was a cool episode because A, B, and C, but then D, D, and then C, Q, and then Stamets, and
well,
then Burnham,
a,
and then
D, R, and E. That's definitely a D, R, and E.
D, R, and E.
Or a C.
That's a B and E.
D, D, N, D, D,
D, N, D, D, N, R, E. You got that DMA? It's like that Bad Brain song about the PMA.
PMA, yeah.
Positive mental attitude.
Yeah.
Except this is
DMA. I know all about that.
Okay, so what's next? I my fork was to provide the forks.
Choose the fork.
No, I provided two more. My options.
Use the fork. Dude.
I don't remember. What was the first option?
I used my power of option to provide an exponential amount of options.
What's the first option?
That's not what your power does.
Go jump. Well, we can talk about the defense mechanism that Tarka came up with, or we can continue with like talking generally about the episode.
All right. What's the next general topic from the episode then? What's the next thing that happened?
They're talking about a null space bubble, which comes into play slightly later, only for reference purposes.
A heart murmur.
So Tarka wanted to destroy this DMA and take the power source.
Mm-hmm.
That's his goal. And so we can obviously. Now, did we know? Did we always know that? Was he always clear?
Yeah,
he said that within the last.
That
few
was
episodes.
What they had modeled.
Yeah,
in their modeling.
So we've known all along that Tarka really has no reason not to do what he's doing. Whereas Book, what's keeping like Book actually though has a lot of reason to do what he's doing, even if people aren't saved by him doing that. You could say that he would want to exact revenge, which he doesn't, which is what it shows is he's not looking for revenge. He's honestly looking to save people. Tarka's not.
The tricky thing for us as the audience is that they're keeping whatever the true situation with Tarka is, his true motivation, the reality behind that, they haven't clarified that yet. They've given us a few clues. Most of those clues are from him, though, and he's an unreliable narrator, so who's 100% sure what the deal is, but whatever that is, we don't know his deal. Book's deal, we can understand.
You're an unreliable narrator.
Right?
Oh, damn.
Book's That's deal. Book is both. So he's simultaneously getting revenge and trying to save people. Mm-hmm. But the way they've framed it, I think, if I'm interpreting it correctly, is he's trying to use the excuse of saving people to get revenge.
Right. But in the end, though,
he wouldn't be all about this so much.
I'm
talking about Book. My argument with Book is there's more to engage with there because, for example, a debate we could have is if Book's planet had not been destroyed, would he still be as hell bent to destroy the DMA? Arguably, you could say arguably that he would still have the same opinion, right? But probably not, right? So we can think about and there's a turbulence.
What if the Kelpian world got destroyed?
Nobody would care about that. Saru would be exactly. sad.
Yeah,
and
Saru
that,
would
and
be
you,
like, yeah,
you
whatever.
Just deal with it.
He was like, yeah. Nobody would care that.
No one cared. But at the end of the episode, Book was amenable to the idea of holding off a week to give them a chance for contact. So yeah.
he's a reasonable.
He does want revenge, but he also recognizes that it's like maybe I can't argue with her deal she's making without straight out saying I want revenge, which is what he's trying
gonna
to avoid.
Stick around for a little bit. If the DMA is going to stay there for a bit.
So do you think it would have been better if to the response of Burnham's deal, instead of Book saying okay we should do that, if he was like, no, I want to exact revenge. No.
it's a tricky thing they're doing here story-wise, because we're supposed to understand that Book does have some reason left in him, right? He's not gone total lunatic.
He's not
completely irrational. Mm-hmm.
Like, and some of those numbers.
And they're showing square us, root of two, they're showing two. Us with the conversations other people are having, and we discussed this last week as well, that there are people who say they understand where he's coming from. The issue is they've got to kind of straddle this line where as soon as they give Book the information that, which at the beginning of this episode, we know that they've given Book the information that the DMA does not appear to be any sort of weapon or monster. It's just a mining dredge. Right?
Yeah.
And in all likelihood, any damage it caused has been incidental. Now, it could be incidental because the aliens don't know, or it could be because they don't care, but it doesn't seem to be an overtly malicious thing. At the very least, that's a fair conclusion to make given the understanding of what this thing does. Now, they have him give the argument that, well, even if that's the case, this thing could kill somebody next week. Or, I mean, within an hour, who knows?
So right, was at the beginning.
We got to do this right away. So they had to set that up to give him an additional rationale.
Yeah.
In that sense, it's structured well, but it's just a bit of an interesting tightrope they're having to walk, and they're having to get the exposition in exactly the right places for any of these motivations to make sense. It's tenuous. I think they did it,
yeah.
But it's a little...
And then what is it, Reese, Lieutenant Commander Reese? Mm-hmm. He's one of those that whole section of the show seemed to be purposely topical somehow,
yeah,
you know, like
I agree.
That whole argument between Reese and Bryson. What was it, Nilsson too? I think she was.
She wasn't on the shuttle though.
No, she wasn't on the shuttle, but she was the first interaction began with Reese and Nilsson saying something about, oh, we're gonna kill Book or something, and he's like, well, you know, or no, wait, she said, yeah, we should kill Book, and he's like, I don't remember what it was. It was basically
he was defending Book.
Book, yeah. Yeah, yeah. So anyways, that
and we know from a previous episode this season that he had a, what was it, a hurricane or some terrible earthquake? I forget. There was a terrible natural disaster that fucked up his town, and he had to be rescued. He was rescued by Starfleet folk.
The Bridge Bros.
So
this week on The Bridge Bros.
But right, my point of that was, did Reese want, I keep saying Reese, did he want revenge?
Reese want?
Was Reese like trying to take the side, I guess, of Book where it's like, we need to save people? But he seems so angry about it. That's the thing, is they seem so angry.
But people get angry
but
about
I guess,
stuff, and
yeah.
I think that's what they're kind of showing, is that they've presented two people who we know get along very well, and this event has popped up that has divided them, and they are... now at each other's throats, even though they normally get along.
And I guess you can be angry without wanting to have revenge. You just want to you're just pissed off that nobody's doing what you think is.
It's like a Harry Kim and Tom Paris kind of situation.
Classic Harry Kim, Tom Paris situation.
A little bit.
Yeah. Sometimes they're at each other's throats. Sometimes.
But it's cute when they're at each other's throats.
Hanging out.
It's different. It's different. Yeah.
Because they're pals.
They're from a different century.
They're good time boys.
My good time pal, or my good time boys.
My pal, my good time boy.
Good old Matt Berry. Matt Berry reference.
My good
all
time
right.
boy.
So, boy. All right, what's the next fork in the road? We've discussed the general concept.
The general concept.
Saru and that Vulcan lady.
Oh, yeah.
Tarina. Okay, this is a technical question.
All right, I'm ready for the technical question.
And it's doubly good because it's related to what we were just talking about.
I've got the Discovery Technical Manual open to page 23.
So how come Book's message that he delivered, it was all glitchy?
They're always glitchy.
No, but it was using the same effect as Tarina's, and I say they should be different because Books was pre-recorded.
The future kind of sucks.
Downloaded, pre-recorded, where Tarina's was...
Error corrected.
And Tarina's was streaming. So it would kind of make sense. I would buy into Tarina's image blipping out because she's streaming, but why would Books? He's just recording a message locally, sending it over the SpaceNet, and they're downloading it. So it shouldn't have that same glitch.
That observation, which is a keen one...
Quinoa
has now filled me with rage
and dread.
Rage,
just rage.
I am now retroactively annoyed.
Maybe yeah, like the LeVar. It's fucked up. I think LeVar your planet's is, got bad transmitter.
I think you're,
they're that. You think this is? They can't even get the signal through well. They have bad ham radio.
Yeah, it's just, and it wouldn't be the same effect. Even if it was fucked up, it would be a different kind of effect. Like, they're trying to imply that the problem is not with the streaming, but with the recording equipment. Like, get fucking some decent recording equipment that doesn't blip every 5 seconds.
I thought you were going to say, get real, bro.
Yeah, get real.
I know. What year is it, for fuck's sake?
It's not 2324. It's
no,
fucking,
it's not.
They might as well treat it like it was 2150.
What is it? 3180 something?
It's 30 or 20 something.
31. It's 32nd century, but 3100.
Yeah.
Due to the wacky way in which centuries.
Wacky.
Hilariously wacky.
So you are going to go on about Tarina now.
Calendar.
And Tarina and Sarut. Jesse, you brought it up.
Yeah, go on. Get up on your
that
high
was
horse.
Another thing to talk about.
It's a talk about.
Yes, right. You gotta
well,
put
that
your
was
money
pretty much it. She had some like smooth way of asking him on a date that like caught him off guard.
It is cute.
Yeah, it's a cute little side adventure.
I've been enjoying this whole business.
And the whole, his conversation with Culber was great because Culber's looking at him like he was a cute child or something.
Yeah.
He's like, you're an idiot. Like, yeah. You're being an idiot.
Yeah. Because when Saru was giving all these reasons, Culber was just kind of looking like, really?
But
really?
I think that sort of seemed like it showed Culber kind of improving in his condition. Like he's getting better.
He was on that
shuttle mission that where everybody almost got fucked up and he was like he was pretty calm and together.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, well, he's already died already.
Stamets is calming him down. Because he freaked out last episode.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, this is, I don't mean for this to be a controversial statement, but it might come across that way.
Oh, no, this is good for podcast downloads.
Yeah, it's good.
Because people like, spread the word.
Yeah,
people listening to what you're about to say.
Like, I spread my cheeks.
Register it, and they'll be like, ooh, I'm going to put this
cheeks?
On.
When I talk, I'm spreading my cheeks so my lips can move.
I'm going to put this on Facebook.
No, it's not. I mean, it's Facebook. I just want to be careful that this isn't interpreted differently than I intend to make, which would be my fault if it got. Anyway, so.
What would be hilarious if I just edited this chunk out of the podcast and made it sound like you said something terrible?
Yeah.
Edited it out.
That'd be ironic.
All right, go ahead. Controversial statement.
You'll know what I'm getting at as soon as I say, what is it called? To fish with only water? Or the other Doug Jones movie with where he was the fish man?
You can.
Oh, yeah. Man fish in the water.
Man fish in the water.
You can teach a man to fish, but you can't.
So. You can't
make him drink.
You can't make him drink a cerulean tea. Wait, where's cerulean? What is that from? Is that Star Wars? That's Star Wars.
That sounds like a Star Wars.
Isn't it color too? Like cerulean?
Cerulean.
Cerulean.
There's that X-Files episode with the guy with the cerulean blue.
Right. So. And the
pusher.
Cerulean blue.
And so.
All right. This is the controversial thing. We'll know it because it's going to be referencing the practicalities
the color of water.
Sex between
ball sex.
A Vulcan. A Nivaran and a
water creature. Essentially, what amounts to
a Kelpian. He's not a water creature. He's a kelp creature.
He's a kelp creature. My fault.
He eats kelp.
They eat kelp and they also display the properties of kelp. That's, yeah. why they're called Kelpian.
Yeah.
It's the only rationale.
Swishing and swirling.
It's like how dolphins were known for dolphing.
Dolphing.
Yeah. That's why they're called dolphins.
They call them fingers, but I've never seen them fing.
I've
right.
totally
so,
seen
so,
the thing.
So Doug,
where have you been?
So Doug Jones has been typecast. Well, not typecast. He's not because he's great. But like he has been in a few movies where he's a fish, a sea like related creature.
Yeah.
And in both cases, he's
Hellboy.
Because he's having sex with. Oh yeah, Hellboy. Yeah, that's right. Good call. And he's having sex with.
He was also the McDonald's or like that moon face guy. Remember Mac Tonight?
Oh, no.
That was his first job. It was as Mac Tonight. You know the moon face guy with the sunglasses?
It's Mac Tonight. Yeah.
He's like playing jazz.
I remember it well.
Back when we were small children and we were scared of the Soviets.
McDonald's opened late
and we hid under our desks to hide from the Soviets.
But then, we didn't do that.
But then President Ronald Reagan single-handedly defeated them. You remember? You remember that?
Yeah.
Cowboy.
I remember there was some
Cowboy
kind of...
Ronnie.
All right, you were going to talk about Saru fucking Tarina.
So, I
was assuming he was... He's talking about controversy.
Well, we kind of did. Well, we kind of just did. And my controversy, I'm saying I was being controversial because I was saying, why should it matter, you know, if a fish person fucks a humanoid.
Still fucked
but
up.
But he's still humanoid.
Whatever term you use is fucked
and
up.
And I can't say Earth-centric because why are we not Vulcan-centric?
Just say a Nivaran.
But you got to point out that but you have to. They're both humanoids. Saru is a humanoid.
Yes.
So you have to point out the fact
that you granted
Saru in our sort of understanding what we see relative to us.
Yeah.
Saru is a sea-like creature. A sea-like humanoid.
You mean like species 10C?
Like an amphibian?
He's sea-like?
And
10C-like?
Yes, 10C, exactly.
I know how to loop in references from the show we're talking about.
And from our perspective, Tarina is like a non-sea, what a earthling would look like. Earthling would look like a Vulcan
it's
in
like
that
a
respect.
Desert planet.
So we're talking about a sea creature.
Vulcans are elf, desert elf people.
Yes. So we're talking about a sea creature having sex with a land creature.
He's got hooves.
Who's got my hooves?
He's got hooves.
My hooves.
He's a land creature.
But
he
you know run, what I'm
he runs
but you,
all fast
but
like
you,
a horse.
But you know what I'm saying.
Not just because they live by the sea and slurp up a
no,
bunch of kelp doesn't
know,
mean they're not land
you
creatures.
You know what I'm saying.
No, I know what you're saying.
It's the way
I'm
he looks.
Vehemently disagreeing with
no,
my
the way
people
he looks.
Are sea people.
The way he looks, he's probably got a...
They're land people who are sea adjacent.
But do you know
they're
what I mean?
They're sea philiacs.
Look, we just talked about how he had roles like in that you agreed with
the
Hellboy.
Sea has the kelp.
How he's a fish person in Hellboy. Boy, and how and
that is non-canon. That's
no,
non-canon
but what you're saying is,
universe.
You know what I'm saying is, he plays this similar kind of sea-looking type.
But
thing.
He also played the moon guy, Mac.
That's
so
not,
he's also
that's
like
neither,
moonish.
That's neither here nor there. And now I think you're just trying to be disagreeable.
I'm not trying to be disagreeable.
Anyway,
but you weren't wrong. That was a controversial statement.
Yes,
and it didn't even directly involve them. Fornicating.
No, it didn't. But how do you think that would work?
I think it would be great.
How do you think
is
this what
the
do you
Mac
think?
Tonight thing?
What
like
do you think?
Some kind of white power thing?
What? What the fuck?
What are you talking about? I've never heard that.
What the fuck?
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it is because that's just what happens in our world. They just pick up things.
Everything
like,
goes to white power.
They're all like, because oh, it's like the number 8. You can't use that. Or
oh,
88
no.
or whatever.
Oh, I found, I think, no, I didn't. Never mind. I thought I was going to find the first interaction between Reese and Nilsson.
But you didn't.
But I didn't. Yeah. So, well, then we can talk about...
Next step.
How Saru and then Tarina, but then programmable, no. And then... What about this Nahn, Commander
hey,
Nahn?
Hey, what
yeah,
about this,
Commander
hey,
Nahn.
Hey, what about
that's,
this?
That's
you
actually,
got your Commander Nahn here.
We overlooked that. We should have talked about
we
that.
We should talk about this.
No, it's just we haven't gotten to that step yet. Now maybe we're at that step, the Commander Nahn step.
It's, yeah.
So?
She's got different breather things.
I'm a big fan of Commander Nahn, always have been.
Yeah.
I was sad when she...
She was on the Enterprise, man.
Yeah, she went. She goes way back.
Can you remind, like, her... me of her origin because like
she came from the Enterprise with Pike.
She was security person right. with Pike
and that guy that died, that O'Donnell or whatever.
And then she was hanging out on the Discovery through some adventures and then got sent to the future for
the
adventure.
Siege ship. She jumped off.
What was
it?
The TCAV. The USS TCAV was a 23rd century, I believe, ship. It's an old ship, a seed vault ship that different Federation members took it in turns to watch over it, and it had all sorts of seeds from around the
and
galaxy.
It was like her people.
And we last saw that when they went to they had a mission to go to in the third season to go to that seed ship in the 32nd century because they needed some seed to cure some sort of encephalitis or something on a planet. And through a
bovine encephalitis.
An interesting and an entertaining and well constructed, as I recall, series of events in that episode, Commander Nahn stayed behind. Because it was...
Nahn means bread.
Yeah.
It's not spelled the same.
It's not spelled the same.
Oh, shit. I've been spelling it the same way this whole time.
And she stayed on that ship until the Bozarin... Was it Bozarin? Bozarin?
Bozak? Is it Bozak?
until her people's turn was concluded, and then she was going to go back to her planet, and then we now meet back up with her. That was previously on Commander Nahn, and now we meet back up with Commander
Nahn. She's not a Benzite.
A Bozagon?
Because the Benzite also have the same atmosphere thing.
Yeah, but they have
but
the,
she's
the,
a,
they're blue and...
It's similar, and it also starts with a B, and it's called a buzz.
I know what she's.
It's not a Boronite.
No. We'll get to the Boronite.
It's a Barzan.
Barzan.
What the fuck happened to my fucking? How did I not remember?
Thanks, Dan.
So old. So and the brain's getting all fucking melty.
Dan's still young.
Trek lore is just leaking out the brains, flopping, just dribbling onto the floor.
So this character comes in. This character comes in because Vance once again sends in someone else to help out with the issue, because that helped out so much when he sent in Tarka to help out Stamets, right? So now he's sending but it was scientists. This is a pro scientist here, pretty good scientist. Now here's this other officer who's going to watch it. And how great it ends up when you have two people in charge. Like that also is. And okay, let's talk about
she's Saru's also a captain.
And so here's her deal. She's a commander.
Yeah.
She's advertised as Burnham's equal, but in function she is a superior officer.
Yes.
So, like, what is that?
At least for that mission.
Okay, but
as long as the book poses a threat with the spore drive.
Well, right, but the thing is like she. I don't understand. It's like she sent her in, and she can override Burnham's stuff at any time. So I don't know. It's just why did they send it?
I'm going to lay it out.
Didn't follow the chain of command.
I'm going to lay it all out here right now. I'm going to make 2 points. Point number one. I enjoyed this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Point number two.
I did.
This episode has some problems. One of those problems, point number 2A, is there's a lot of exposition, but not it's not the issue that Discovery has had in the past and plenty of TV shows have of too much exposition. It's just exposition for the purpose of explaining something that would otherwise be ridiculous. So sometimes in Star Trek they use technobabble, other times they use whatever. It's not a big deal. You can go ahead and grab a cookie. Jesse's grabbing a cookie. He just doesn't want to crinkle.
It's too crinkly.
So it's ironic when people try to make things less noisy, they just take longer.
It's Girl Scout cookie season. I'm not going to... You can't deny...
Discovery's pretty good with the techno babble. It's only when Stamets gets going.
No, they are good. They are good. The thing is here, they at the very beginning of that scene with the Admiral, it's the whole scene is the Admiral saying, like, you got to understand the optics are crazy and it's logically stupid and all this other stuff. But, you're going to get to go. The Discovery is going to get to go. You're going to get to stay in command. And there's going to be only this one. And then they add on that layer bringing in Commander Nahn. It seems, again, we're not the types generally to complain about the realism of a story or whether this would happen in an actual sort of military organization.
Who cares?
And who cares? Who knows?
However,
this was, I don't know if there was a more elegant way they could have done it or if they maybe hadn't called attention to it at all would have been better. But as soon as he said that, I was like, you know, this is seemingly ridiculous to send this person's partner,
send the USS Mitchell,
romantic life partner after him when quite likely killing him might be the thing that's necessary. And by the way, it turns out it was.
And Nahn, she was seemingly cool with it by the end. You know, you'd think that there would be some serious repercussions on Burnham's part. Like, it's like someone would have to someone's going to need to rain down hard on her, but I don't know if they will. It doesn't seem like it, but she made such a colossal fuck up.
The episode doesn't want us to think that. The episode, I enjoyed it, but it's hard for me to come to the end of this episode. I'm guessing like you, Dan, that without saying like, there were, like, everyone seemed to have made poor decisions here.
Yeah.
If you're thinking in the terms of the good of the many outweighs the good of the few. It seems like they could have solved this problem with the sad option of dooming Mr. Book and Mr. Tark.
And considering at one point Nahn straight up was like, they're firing at us right fucking now. They are firing at us. And she's like, no, they're just fucking with us. They don't mean to hurt us. It's like, after a while, it doesn't fucking matter anymore. They're making this too difficult, you know?
It's ridiculous.
And I guess, I don't know if they were trying to, I don't know if this is to sort of bring Nahn back to replace Tilly or something, or I don't know if they just want to bring Nahn back as
a character.
I was
hoping it was going to be Tilly when they were like, it's a family face.
I did too.
Like, it's going to be Tilly.
I hope that too. Part of me knew that it wasn't, but I was also like,
it would be more obnoxious.
It
if it, I, I, I love Tilly. Tilly's one of my favorite characters. Yeah. I would be annoyed if Tilly was like I'm going to overrule your order. It's like, no, that's not such, as a character archetype. That's not.
True. But
also, there's no the drama isn't the right kind of drama.
Right. So I guess I don't know if they're bringing back that character, but I guess it's either they brought it in to bring back the character later, or they really wanted to apply that pressure over the episode of us being like, they're gonna fire on Book any moment. But the pressure never felt too strong. It never felt like Nan was really pushing that hard. I mean, she was being like, dude, we got to do this, but it never built it up. I was never really concerned that was gonna happen.
Similar to last week when they set up Haz Mazzaro as he's fun until he's not.
Yeah,
and then they
right.
don't show us the not fun.
Yeah.
He's just charming the whole time. I agree. A similar thing here. Let's take a quick break, and then when we get back, we will continue to talk about this this particular
with different voices.
All right, we'll be right back. All right, we're back. It's got Star Trek. The podcast.
It's got Star Trek.
This is my different voice that I'm doing. This is my new voice.
So
was that a good voice?
Yeah, it was a good voice.
Does it sound like my other voices?
No, nothing like your
Sounds
other voices.
Sounds like your other voices.
Okay. Tarka plan, Star Trek Discovery.
Tarka.
Zip zap boop bop. I agree. I think it's the whole pressure situation. Again, as enjoyable as this episode was, the plot pretty much does come down to that very classic two characters who the audience loves and who love each other are put into a position where they might have to choose to kill the other person mm-hmm. in order to accomplish their goal. We've seen this many times before, and there's nothing wrong with doing a traditional, well-worn story element. It's not unusual in Star Trek, and it is not unusual in storytelling in general, because some of these things are just, they're good rubrics for telling a tale. However, it was a predictable story. I think that was one issue I had with this episode, is I kind of knew exactly what was going to happen, not the particulars, but I think it was not difficult to realize that Book would come around in the end. Mm-hmm. Through some mechanism, he would come around in the end, and that Tarka would betray him and launch the thing anyway.
Maybe I'm not thinking like in Starfleet terms. Maybe things in the future are really that much more advanced. But one would think that Book would face some serious consequences for this. And like I said, Burnham for fucking up so colossally.
And Vance even.
Vance would probably they would probably just say like you're incompetent or something. I don't know. But Burnham, they would say
in a real government, the Vance would be going down.
Too. You think so?
Yeah.
So
totally.
So is Book gonna?
There would be a restructuring,
right? So they don't. They can't really. That's the one thing though that they can't really afford to restructure in this situation. But do you think
they got that new Starfleet Academy going?
Do they think spore drive, man?
Do you think the story will like sort of explore the like repercussions for Book other than the passing statement? You know, I don't know. I guess that's not really the focus about it. Is what's going to happen?
It does
because it's a story. No, so.
But it sets up an interesting question of what is going to be the resolution with Book. Does he die at the end? Does he survive but have to leave? Does he get completely forgiven? Is it some combination of those things?
But that president's pissed off,
right? So we'll see. I'm intrigued by it. This is not a there's some issues floating around in this episode that are sort of structural and motivational that are somewhat problematic, but the overall execution was good, right? I do like so much about this episode. The individual components I thought are cool. I did very much like the realization that the DMA was powered from the other side of the wormhole. I thought that's clever.
Yeah, they had the cool bits where they're sort of maneuvering with Book and like they're jumping around and like that whole kind of, that was all neat.
Yeah, the cat and mouse game.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
Again, predictable. Yeah. But the individual components were not necessarily predictable, and that was fun to watch exactly what was going on. Even though I think I knew exactly what was going to happen. I don't know. What do you think, Dan?
Well,
Mr. Typey Bones, Mr. Looking Stuff Up.
I was wondering how was Tarka able to figure out that this you know, null space bubble would protect the power source if he never got a read on the source of its location.
That was how he modeled it in the first place. That's just how he modeled it.
Well, that's what I'm saying, though. It's like he didn't have a read on the power source's location at all, though, because he was like, oh, shit, it's on the other side.
He fucked up.
He fucked up. You think he just had a bad model? I mean, it seems
bad
like
model, baby.
It seems like he put all his eggs in one basket there because he never considered the idea that maybe the power source is. So obviously he didn't see the power source. He was just assuming it was there. Basically, and so that's how pompous he is. I don't
know. Rizin shines.
He's a Rizin. He's from Ryza.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he's from.
You know, Book should have really given Tarka a good walloping at one point in that a couple
totally
times
like,
in that show.
Kicked his ass, boot up,
boot to boot.
I do think another issue with this episode is when a character does something stupid. It's like the horror movie trope, and both Book and Burnham, neither of them considering that Tarka would have both the motivation and the capacity to do something like blow up the thing, especially how Tarka was working. Like Book in particular, Tarka was already doing crazy shit up to this point, including firing a bunch of quantum torpedoes at the Discovery.
He messed with like Book's ship. He all changed it up.
Yeah.
Like, why isn't Book more vigilant about his own craft, which he normally
I guess,
you know, right. vigilant about his own shit.
And he didn't think immediately to be put Tarka in restraints.
Yeah.
He clearly, Tarka was not agreeing with his, and then Tarka starts giving the evil James Bond villain speech after it, and he's like, Book is just like, okay, all right, well, I'm willing to listen to you.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Jabber on about fucking game theory and shit.
Right. So, I mean,
it's disappointing.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I guess could you argue it away and say, oh, well, Tarka snuck in all this other technology along with the spore drive interface. He snuck in this other shit too? Or do you think Tarka was just, you know, whittling away
you
at
could
his...
You've just presented a solution, which would have been that that Book restrains Tarka to a chair and Tarka's looking all coy and smirky. And then Book is all like, why are you looking so coy and smirky? We're not doing what you want to do.
It's
and
a
then,
chair that doesn't
And then
like
Tarka's all like, 5, 4, 3, 2, click. And he makes a funny little motion with his hand, and then his pre-programmed proximity whatever contingency plan, because he's so clever, goes off, and then he's like, there, I, you know, it would have made us less disappointed Book for not doing the obvious.
It was it was kind of hard to figure out.
I hope they both get court-martialed, the sons of bitches.
Yeah, Tarka probably more than Book.
Throw the book at him.
Well, Book's not a commissioned officer. He can't be court-martialed.
They can do something to him.
It wouldn't be a court martial. In either case, it would
maybe
just
they'll send him to New Zealand. They'll send him to New Zealand.
Yeah,
who are you talking about?
That's such a terrible place to send
Book and Tarka. Will be sent to New Zealand.
New Zealand,
like Tom Paris.
Send him to Hawaii. Right.
So that brings me to the next point, which was one of the directions we could have taken at the fork of the road at the very top of the episode, which was,
but we didn't.
Tarka covering their ship in programmable nanobot matter.
Yeah.
The defense mechanism that Tarka used against that ship.
Oh, yeah, that was effed.
So it was interesting defense system. I kind of dug it. I thought it was kind of cool.
Oh, yeah.
It was, but it was weird because it doesn't deflect objects like you would think a defense mechanism does. It absorbs them and squishes them. It was this weird sort of tentacle equivalent of a tentacle sort of thing, like a sarlacc or something.
I like this from a sci-fi perspective. I did not enjoy it from a dramatic perspective.
No, right.
I thought it felt very flat as a dramatic tool, because when we have something we can compare it to earlier in the season when Tilly and her cadet pals are in a shuttle surrounded by ice worm monster creatures. That shit was scary.
Yeah, that
and
was
intense.
Up.
And you were worried about what was happening to the people inside. In this instance, it just didn't have that vibe to it. Gribbly's grabbing onto the shuttle. They were showing us danger. They were showing us fear. They were showing shit cracking open. And I didn't feel any tension.
That's a good point. Yeah, it does. Yeah, you didn't hear things. You didn't feel like you were inside the trap.
And it's not that you know these are characters with plot armor that are in no danger. Saru's not going to be in danger. Bryce and Reese are not going to be in danger. We know them. But we knew Tilly wasn't in danger either. I mean, you can have tension when you know the characters will ultimately be fine.
Yeah.
And Discovery does an excellent job of doing that all the time. Here, I don't think they did.
And you know, to go back to the Tilly in the tentacle planet, ice tentacle planet thing, was she doesn't necessarily have to, the stakes don't have to be her life in order for it to be dramatic. Yeah. Maybe something crucial happens and she has to go, it brings her on some journey we didn't expect her to take or some bullshit like that. Right. This was just kind of like, oh, they're going to get there. Oh, they're not going to be able to get there. You know, we didn't. And like, where else would it really, they wouldn't take the episode in a different direction. And it was confusing because I didn't. So Tarka programmed this defense mechanism to kill them. He was
not even to kill them. The implication from Tarka was that he installed all this stuff
before
they went to the Karma Barge,
right?
To Hazmizaro's Karma Barge.
But he talked about how is this autonomous
Hazmizaro's Karma Barge?
Yeah, Hazmizaro's Karma Barge.
Hazmizaro's Karma Barge.
I had a sandwich at Hazmizaro's Karma Barge.
It's no quarter.
I have a T-shirt that says I had a sandwich at Hazmizaro's Karma Barge,
and all I got was this lousy latinum.
It came with potato chips.
So he was talking
big old fucking classic canard.
He was, you know, like Quark. Do you think Quark has? You think Haas will be one day be a rival to Quark? Not now, because Quark is a mega power. Yeah, but like
Quark
maybe
runs a franchise.
Yeah, then maybe one day Haas.
Well, Quark is dead at this stage. Obviously.
Wait, do you think franchise is still, or his company is still going?
Quark's his company.
Quark's,
that'd be awesome. We don't know. We haven't seen enough.
I mean, it's going by Picard, but
that's Picard.
Picard? What are you talking about?
I'm talking about Picard.
During the Picard show. It's what did I say?
You said Picard.
And during Lower Decks.
Duty above all.
Yeah, in Lower Decks. Yes.
Yeah. So
that's earlier than.
Well, Quark's is a franchise now that it's going to live on forever. It's probably
come to Quark's. Quark's is fun.
It's probably. Represents some kind of Ferengi cultural thing at this point. I don't know. So
it's run by Rom.
So we know that. Well, unfortunately, it's not run by. No, I was thinking Nog. Never mind. Sorry.
Yeah,
that was kind of a bummer to bring that up. Yeah. I'm sorry.
You made it one.
Yeah. Okay. And I didn't even need to. So. The Tarkus, so yes, we know that this is an autonomous defense mechanism. That's kind of his excuse. Is like, oh, it's this autonomous system, blah, blah, blah. It never really said, he was just kind of like, you know. And
I threw together on our way back from blah, blah, blah.
It made him, and it made it seem like this wasn't in his control. Like, he didn't know that this was going to happen. He was like, oh, yeah, right. I just installed a bunch of shit. I didn't know this would happen. Now, I was thinking, like, that's kind of weird that you would have this system and you don't really know what it's going to do. But and also on top of that, he seemed legitimately surprised that it was so aggressive, right? And when Book was fixing the shit, Tarka was right on board being like, yeah, let's fix it. Let's get this off. Like, Tarka was like, yeah, we got to get rid of this shit. We don't want it to kill the people. I don't want anyone dead too. So the only thing I can think is it was kind of like the equivalent of Tarka got his hand caught in the cookie jar or something, you know, where he was hoping it was going to kill him. But then since Book was like, what's going on? Tarka's just pretending like, oh, I didn't know. Oh, shit, you know, I don't know. Like,
oh, shit.
The question is what was his motivation? Was Tarka's motivation to actually cause that much damage to the ship, or was it...
I think he just doesn't care.
He just seems to not care about it.
And he didn't install this to worry about Discovery as much as just worry about people in general. And as he said, they're going to go meet with some arms dealers, so maybe they need some extra whatever.
Right.
There could be some other people besides Discovery.
He's the type of programmer who is programming for a purpose and couldn't care less about various failure modes because it doesn't think they're going to happen.
When he doesn't care, and then when it happens, do you think he was helping Book fix the scenario?
Have been trying to help, although mainly he was saying it's autonomous, so I can't do anything.
I
don't know.
And or if it was just trying to be like recognized at that point, you know, the best thing that I can do to complete this mission is to have. It's like he has to weigh: is it better to kill these people, or is it better to have Book trust me and help him?
And this is an issue we have, as I mentioned earlier, referenced earlier. That we are not sufficiently clear on what Tarka's motivations are. Now, that fact is not an error. That fact is a storytelling choice. They are meeting out information and often unreliable information about Tarka and his motivations throughout the course of the season. And depending on where they go, he could turn out to be an evil shithead. I think probably more likely they'll attempt to redeem him in some fashion. Maybe he dies. Maybe he gets to where he's going.
I hope he dies.
Well, my guess is they might do like a Moses thing where he like sees the promised land, but doesn't get to go there. You know,
he pokes
his head through the wormhole.
Moses.
He sees it. Does he part those seas?
Yeah.
Because he sees
Moses.
It.
Yeah.
I see, said the blind man as he picked up his hammer and saw.
Yeah. Saw.
But we don't know. And that is a storytelling choice.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I suppose the advantage of that storytelling choice is it keeps us interested and unsure of what Tarka's motivations are. And so we're unsure how to read him. And it helps us buy into the fact that a character like Book could be swept up in his plan. Right. But presumably we'll find out at some point in this season, and then retroactively we'll know. And maybe it'll read differently as we watch the season over again. The drawback, of course, is that in the meantime, we're sort of flailing around a little. We're not sure what we're supposed to think.
Mm-hmm.
That, again, may be intentional, but it complicates the way we're thinking. So maybe some stuff we're complaining about now, in retrospect, will actually be like, oh, okay, you know what? That should all make sense, which is great if you can manage that. But this isn't like we're watching Lost or Orphan Black or something where part of the fun is in the mystery.
Right.
I think they're trying to do that a little bit. The problem, of course, is depending on how that resolves, people can enjoy it or not enjoy it. It's season three with the burn. A lot of that mystery, those mystery elements were quite entertaining, but some people were happy with the resolution, some people were neutral, and some people couldn't stand what the actual solution to that season-long mystery was. And that sort of puts a permanent mark on, no matter how much you enjoyed the season while watching it, retroactively you might be like, ugh.
Yeah, if it doesn't really come to anything.
There's a bit of a risk.
I mean, if you're going to string people along, there better be some kind of satisfying conclusion, right?
And satisfying otherwise is subjective, just, of course.
It's so. it's like a cream egg without the cream or the chocolate.
Blue ball.
It's like blue ball.
It's not blue. It's
or a cream egg.
Cream egg or blue balls.
You mean a Cadbury cream egg or some other brand of
it's
cream
like
egg?
It's like a cream egg without the cream.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hollow chocolate edifice.
Hollow chocolate? Hollow chocolate? What are you talking about? Hollow chocolate? That DMA controller looked pretty wild, though, when they fucking... That was another scene. It reminded me of...
Multidimensional Tesseract type business.
Yeah, when they... It reminded me of the scene...
Four-dimensional cube.
In All In, the last episode, when they went down onto that planet and they saw the Karma Barge, but first it was some kind of sea monster thing, mm-hmm. and it was just they sent.
As I recall, you referred to it as a hippopotamus sea monster.
It was like a dinopotamus.
Dinopotamus.
It was like
right.
A hippo monster.
You were
yeah.
super proud of that.
I was just observing it because people were saying
you were proudly observing.
No, people were questioning me, and I was just vehemently.
Which people are you referring to?
Me and Jesse.
Yes, you were saying it doesn't look like a hippo, and I was like, yeah, it does. It's a dino. So maybe you might have gotten your wires crossed a little. Well, it's okay.
All right.
But they descended upon this sort of
Osmazaro's Karma Barge.
Right, exactly. And it was the same kind of thing where they descended upon this sort of overlook of this grand scenario, and that DMA shoot was, of course, that's some galactic fucking type shit. These people are powerful. These species.
You don't say.
Yeah.
You don't say.
Their whole mining operation is this fucking giant thing that they can just bring back whenever they want, you know, and it's like they're not gonna stop, you know.
But I believe I said last week.
Do you think they're big? Do you think they're giant, or do you think they're humanoid in size, just with a lot of power?
Probably. I don't know. They look like circles. They're just circles of light. Whatever they are, as I suggested last week,
I think they're crocodilians.
I'm resubscribing to my prediction that in the end it'll turn out that something terrible is happening to those people, and that's why they've sent their DMA mining thing, like mining for boronite. Beyond where they used to,
Boromir,
which is why we're noticing it, and so we'll have to help them in some fashion.
Maybe it's the Klingons are trying to fuck them over.
And
yeah,
so back to Nan, I was thinking about her role in this whole episode was kind of like. Did you ever see those movies where you've got the different people from different departments, right? And you've got the military guy who's the way he handles a crisis is by blowing everything up. He's like, we gotta throw our bombs to win. And then
Dr. Strange.
And the diplomat's like, no, we don't. We have to win. We have to beat them with words, you know? And but the military officer's just like, brr, 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 brr. And so that's kind of like what she's doing because she just keeps wanting to blow shit up. But it's interesting because she's a little more sympathetic because we know about this character, I guess. So we're to assume
and
that
her plan seems totally reasonable.
And it is reasonable. And in the end, they should have fucking done that. Like they should have done that when they escaped, when he uses auto defense system that so they escaped off somewhere else. Like that should have been the point. Like, okay, they're fucking in the shit now. It shouldn't have come to all that. But yeah, we already talked about that, though.
Well, it's not the Enterprise.
It certainly isn't. I found the line where the first mention that I thought I'd found before of Lieutenant Commander Reese talking to Nielsen, where he's expressing, "You thought wrong," where he thought, you know, that it's taking longer to describe this than it would be to say it. So nah. Nielsen goes,
you mean to read the lines?
Yeah, read the lines.
That would be quicker.
Read between the
lines.
That would
take up less of our audience's valuable time.
They're talking about getting a book, and one of them goes, I think it's Reese, goes, "I can't believe we're actually doing this." And then Nielsen goes, "Book hasn't exactly given us much of an option." And then Reese goes, "He thinks he's doing the right thing. A lot of people agree." That was that was the moment that Reese expressed dissent and brought up this idea of, like, you know, we gotta blow up the thing to save the lives, you know, and then that brought that whole sort of side plot thing, which was kind of
Who says a lot of people? A lot of people agree.
Yeah, I know. It's weird. It was kind of weird that they included that. It was sort of a nod to something that kind of happens.
Maybe he's watching the future equivalent to Fox News.
Exactly.
Do you know what it's called, by the way? Do you know what that channel is?
No.
Fox News.
Not necessarily.
Fox would be into some pretty progressive think. I'd like.
You'd be all like, do you think that universal healthcare is necessary? Not necessarily.
Not necessarily.
See, it's not necessary.
So, I don't know.
Privatism can solve many ills.
They were trying to make it, like, relatable with that part, you know, to talk to, like, how things are now or whatever, but they didn't really follow through too deeply on that, but, you know, it was just kind of a little flavor, I guess.
And I like that. That's good. It's good just to enter, and it's also showing us more of the Bridge characters, which is a fair criticism of earlier seasons of Discovery. Mm-hmm. Really, a lot of the Bridge characters were nameless much of the time. They started in season threes, they started being really good about using their names a lot, and they've continued that, but it's particularly in season four, they've been giving more actual characterization to the people in terms of their, like, this disagreement is a very good example, right? Showing that, showing them react differently and pointing the camera in their direction for longer than just a split second, which is good.
That bridge is fucking huge, man.
It's a big old bridge.
It's a big fucking
Discovery's
bridge.
A big old ship. It
gets bigger and bigger.
It's bigger than the Enterprise. If you look when they're together, the Enterprise is beefier in some ways, but the Discovery's got like that. Mm. It's long. It's a long ass ship.
It's got a long ass ship.
It's got all them laboratories. Remember, Discovery was built to be kitted out with all million different laboratories.
It's got that spore drive.
And of course, the place to hold all the. Well, what about the Enterprise? Is the place to hold all the whales?
The whales. Cetacean. I don't know if they had. We don't know if they had cetacean ops back then.
I don't think they had it at.
Maybe they didn't have it until after Star Trek IV.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So speaking of large ship,
who was doing that?
Were you talking about a large ship?
We're talking about the large bridge. We were talking about. You're talking about characters getting more. You know, nods at more
about
characters.
A perfectly adequately sized ship.
Yeah. So the different characters. I noticed that reminded me for some reason that I saw Detmer is back, and it looked like she was in the same shot with other people.
You haven't seen too much Detmer this time.
No, the first couple shots of her, I think she was just kind of a close-up, so that wasn't necessarily her, but unless they took old footage, it seemed like they were all in the same set together. Because that happens.
It is all that COVID-related filming stuff.
Right.
For example, Tig Notaro had a lot of... She already was going to be limited anyway, but I think she had even additional limitations on her appearances this season.
It's funny they mentioned
because
her,
of the COVID travel and Canada and all that other stuff, and Tig Notaro's got other stuff going on. So in this episode, you have that line where Burnham is like, just get Reno to do it.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And you're like, wait a minute.
I always enjoy when they do that thing where they imply a person's still around.
Right. Yeah, don't...
When
she's still here.
When the actor's not available.
Yeah.
Or it's like, O'Brien's just on vacation.
And you know that actually made me think directly of O'Brien. It brought up the question.
O'Brien's giving a lecture at Starfleet Academy. So we've got this other potato face being
better than a spoonhead.
Jesus Christ.
President Spoonhead.
So that got me thinking. Now we all know O'Brien was a returning character, was a cast member on DS9, and you could call him a cast member on TNG, but how many episodes do you think he actually appeared in a TNG episode, you know?
He was in lots of TNG.
He was in a lot of them.
Several.
He was in several.
Because he was in the first season, he used to be at the con a lot.
He has the record, he's like the runner-up besides Michael Dorn for the most Star Trek.
So, Oh, for the most just being in episodes?
Yeah, the most like episodes and movies and stuff.
I guess. Oh, because then it's not just TNG. Okay, but so you'd think they could at least have Jet Reno hanging out in the background with Stamets doing some stuff. But like you said, because of the COVID stuff made it all tricky. It's just made me think she's kind of like O'Brien in this respect, but even less than O'Brien. I don't know. It just made me think that.
Well, hopefully we'll see more of her, not only this season, but
she's coming back.
But it did seem like there were shots of Detmer on the ship with other people, but who knows if that was her.
They should just have a Star Trek. Like,
if those were just recorded.
Star Trek Detmer.
No. Limited series.
Star Trek Detmer.
No. Star Trek Reno. And it'll be Jet Reno, but it takes place in Reno, Nevada, where she retires to set up shop, and she starts some engineering company in Reno, Nevada.
And she has like a...
It's like an Office Place comedy.
Like a trailer kind of house, like that chicken Picard.
Like in Snake Juice?
Snake Weave.
Snake Weed.
Snake
Weed.
Snake Leaf. Is it Snake Weed? Snake Leaf, I think, right?
Did you notice...
Raffy.
Raffy? Like that singer?
Yeah, like the singer.
Did you notice that that Detmer... that part? She goes, it's like finding a needle in a haystack. As my grandma used to say.
I know, that's hilarious.
It's like, come
it's
on,
like
man.
Your grandmother was old.
It's like, younger, why'd you have to
younger
throw
than
that
us.
I like that part.
Yeah,
but it was silly, but
it was really silly where they do that. I can't think.
Well, she's 23rd century, and so her grandmother, and blah,
right.
blah, blah.
She's trying to rub it in our faces.
But I think finding a needle in a haystack, it's a kind of colloquialism you expect will probably persist for quite a while.
Yeah, you'd think.
Because
there's got to be an analog to just about every culture of that kind of situation with the animal feed and stuff.
Many of our phrases have become anachronistic, but are retained, right? That's just the way it is.
It's like finding isolinium in a boronite compound.
Yeah, it's exactly like... All right, let's take a break and then talk about boronite and close things down. How's that?
Boronite.
All right, we'll be right back. We have returned.
We have returned.
We have returned.
The snot alien was talking about dark matter interference.
Linus
yeah. yeah. He had this first serious role. His first serious role where he wasn't like getting sick on people.
He's not joking.
Yeah, and he wasn't playing cards and getting pissed off because he lost his hand of cards. That's another subtle thing you've seen with Linus.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Bad so gambling. Boronite. Boronite is important.
Yes.
Boronite reveals some potential directions this plot is going.
Yes.
Do you know what they are? It's okay if you don't. It's okay if you don't, because it's semi-obscure. But
The aliens are after the Boronite.
The aliens are after the Boronite, but Boronite is a Star Trek invention, and it pre-exists Discovery.
Okay, then I don't know what you're doing.
All right, so where it pre-exists Discovery is in Star Trek Voyager. Later on in the or midway, episode 87, something like that. Down the way in the Star Trek Voyager.
Down the way.
Out in the confusing
space. But there's the Omega, the episode is the Omega Directive, and it's all about this Omega particle that
I think
it's worth, I'm going to rewatch that episode because I haven't seen it in a long time, so I'm going to rewatch it before next week, because I've heard people, like, all through season 4 since the DMA was announced, I think even before season 4 started, people were on the internet, Star Trek people on the internet.
People were on the internet.
You know what I'm talking about, right?
Even before the year of Star Trek, people were on the internet.
Star Trek people on the internet have been positing that the DMA may be related to this Omega particle business, right? And so in the Omega Directive...
That sounds like what people would do.
What I recall is, and my recollection has been aided somewhat by Memory Alpha, what I recall is that, without giving away plot mechanics in that particular episode, there's this thing called the Omega particle, which is super bad and super shady. And if people get it, and I think the Borg are trying to make I think the Borg make an Omega particle, but whatever.
The Borg have like a religious revere for it.
Yeah, they're all
Reverence?
About this Omega particle.
Yes.
And the reason why that is relevant here is because Boronite was listed as one of the things that is very hard to find, but if you get enough of it, you can conceivably make an Omega particle.
Mm.
And so the Omega particle is bad shit. The Boronite by itself, not a big deal, but when it's like converted into this Omega particle, that can be super awesome for energy or whatever, but it's also potentially very dangerous for the whole universe, right? So
And they thought isolinium was dangerous.
Yeah.
So why isn't bornite banned, but isolinium is?
Good question. Mm. And I think the main answer to that question is that bornite is so difficult to actually acquire because it occurs naturally in infinitesimal amounts. So now that we know that the DMA is mining for boronite.
Boronite. I can think of Adam Sandler every fucking right.
Boromir.
Billy Madison.
Now that we know that, we can start making associations, whether it's the omega particle or not, the writers of this
we are the writers
science fiction program.
Who are these people?
Have opted consciously to select an element or molecule, whatever it is, a compound, a mineral, whatever the fuck boronite is. It sounds like it's a mineral. Have decided to connect this season's big monster dealy to that Omega Directive episode. Hmm. So that doesn't give us all that much information other than maybe there's a connection there and maybe that'll come up somehow.
How many shows do you think actually look on the internet for the responses that the way that the audience predicts the show will head, and maybe the writers have like four different directions and the one that the audience picks, they go with a different one. So they're always ahead of the audience.
They've already produced the show, man. You know, they don't have time to do that shit. It's done.
I don't think too many shows have in like the can. One of those like,
yeah, but like what about
two-way
between
South Park?
Could,
but what about South Park could pull that off maybe.
What about between seasons?
Yeah, well, yes, between seasons, sure. I'll give you that.
Maybe.
Between seasons, they could change things up. I think that's less relevant on this particular television program.
He just said what I said was stupid.
I didn't say it was stupid.
It's okay. It's okay.
You said it was stupid, which leads me to believe that part of you thinks it might have been stupid.
See, he just did it again.
No, I'm not saying that.
I'm
suggesting that you maybe. In fact, I would argue you shouldn't think it's stupid.
That
it's
idea.
Reasonable.
That idea you came up with.
Why would anyone
that's cute.
Think it was
stupid. That's adorable. That's an adorable idea you came up with. Oh, I didn't say you were stupid. Look, if you took that comment to mean that I was saying you're stupid, maybe you're the one who thinks you're stupid.
Regardless of how you want to
interpret
it.
There's gotta be a name for that kind of manipulation.
Regardless of how you want to interpret it, please, I must make clear, at no point did I or do I think it was adorable.
You motherfucker.
You're giving yourself a little too much credit there.
You motherfucker.
All right, any other? I think that got through most of the main primary story points. Any others?
I think they may have mentioned it before, but they did mention the USS Mitchell.
Yeah. Do we know which Mitchell that refers to?
I was just assuming it was Gary Mitchell.
Gary Mitchell?
Gary Mitchell.
Because yeah. I'm not joking, Lee.
Yeah.
Snap.
I'm not joking, Lee. For that, to get that joke, go back and listen to the first episode of our podcast.
Many, many episodes. 115.
The first episode's not too bad, I think. I don't know. I haven't listened to it not in too years at this stage. So I don't know. Go listen to it and let us know if it's shit or not.
Remember when Saru was like, thank you, doctor, for that unexpected candor.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is Culber? The tall Shi'ar?
No, you mean, you don't mean the tall Shi'ar.
The Kuat Malat?
Dude, you look, that's embarrassing.
Oh, man.
You've embarrassed yourself.
Shit. I really ruined that.
Kawat Malat.
But that's a different kind of candor. That's
fuck. What was the Tal Shi'ar?
Absolute candor. Tal Shi'ar all about eating soup. eating that soup. Oh yeah, you guys, the unification.
I'll try it again.
That was a different podcast.
I'll try it again. I'll try it again. I'll go.
All right.
What is Culber? The Klingons?
Okay. Were you purposely telling
it's like
it bad?
Like your owl voice.
Well, yeah, it did sound like my owl voice. Hey, Willie, what was it? The Klingons? Do they have any cat? Let me ask
you. Before you get up for that final snack,
I want you to know I'll be right back.
Whoa.
Ha! Willie! What is Culber? The Kuat Malat. There, I said it. It's funny.
All right. There you go. Good.
Shit.
You got it down.
I thought that was such a good joke, too.
I mean, it was. You just fucked it up.
Yeah. God damn it. Okay, it's fine. It's fine. It's out there.
All right. Odds and ends.
It's out there. It's out there in the ether.
Odds and ends. Let's look at our various various lists
so,
here.
Well, so the very end, those aliens were essentially, they were talking about how we made first contact, essentially. So those, was it, basically the aliens were
we
like-
We sent a message. We destroyed their thing, that's effectively a message.
But that's what-
We don't know how they interpreted it, though.
Yeah, they already did that, though, and they were, their plan was to play, you know, what's it called, clean up when you clean up the mess, you know, play the
mobbing up operation.
Mama gets it out with ALL.
That one, whatever, you know.
Bounty, the bounty, damage, the quicker picker upper.
No, damage control.
Tisk, 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 whisk, whisk.
So
whisk.
When they
Ricky Tikki Tavi.
So what?
It's about a mongoose. It's a whole story about a mongoose.
So when they blew up the DMA and they were like, okay, they're playing damage control with species 10C. But and they were like, okay, we'll play damage control, it'll be all good. And then it pops back, and that's when they're like, uh-oh. Is it just like the aliens responded and said, we're doing this, fuck you? Or like, why was it suddenly so dramatic that it came back?
Nobody knows.
It was overly dramatic. But
right.
In a practical sense, you could say, okay, the fact that the DMA has returned
means they're powerful, yeah.
At the minimum, says that they know something happened and they've corrected for it, right? So the point being,
they were going to find out anyway.
Yeah, of course they were going to find. Yeah, but nothing had happened yet. So you could argue, and an assumption could be made. It may be a false assumption, but an assumption could be made that as long as the DMA was going along, the aliens didn't have any other particular information or cares. They're just like, it's just doing its thing. Who knows? Maybe it was an automated thing for all we know, right? Mm. But now they know, okay, that's disappeared. And by replacing it, they're reasserting it now.
Yeah. So
that could be interpreted as like, fuck you, we're going to do it again. Or it could just be like, yeah. Huh, that's weird. Oh, well, yeah, send another one out.
Okay.
That's why I think it was overly dramatic, because you could just as easily assume the aliens were just like, it's like when you send your drones out to do work for you, and one of those drones like goes off your little grid, and you're like, okay, you know, I'll send another one to replace it.
Maybe the purpose was to make us quite like wonder, like next week, are they going to follow up? What did that mean or something? But I don't know. It wasn't very clear to me.
Like a lot of things in this episode, it was under a little bit underdeveloped. Again, does not undermine the overall enjoyment of the episode. Well, it does undermine the overall enjoyment of the episode, just not massively. The episode was, this was moving the plot forward, and it moved it forward effectively. Gave us a little drama.
It's mostly that kind of an episode. There's not much to say about it. It's just sort of moving things.
Yeah, through. You're right. It was.
Thematic, really.
I noticed that there were less things to note on in this episode because, yeah, there was more just stuff kind of happening and more sort of like, okay, get to this point, now get to that point. And in between, it's just how are we going to keep them from getting to that point?
And one minor issue I had was the end of the last episode, part of the whole fun twist at in the previous episode was that Burnham had demonstrated quite firmly that no matter what her situation with Book is, she's like, I'm on Starfleet's side. I'm on Federation side. Right. And that's walked back a little bit this week because the tension that we're supposed to feel is that Burnham's not going to do the right thing because her emotions will be clouded by this whole Book business, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they sort of are. So I guess she wasn't as firm as in her loyalty as we thought was demonstrated last week. It's a little confusing. It's cumbersome.
Yeah,
cumbersome but enjoyable.
Yeah, I did enjoy it.
Because like still you never get to the point where Non has to take over, but there's all this sort of friction.
And by the end, there's no friction at all.
And there's no friction. Yeah, like understanding still wins out. It's still Discovery, the whole message of understanding.
What it is this is a have your cake and eat it too episode.
Yeah, right. It seems like there should have been little, maybe less.
And it was predictable. Right? Yeah. The have your cake and eat it. You have your cake. She makes some resolution and progress with Book. Mm-hmm. Boom. And eat it too is you still get to blow up the motherfucking DMA and get to see the cool explosions and move that plot forward a little bit.
And then it comes right back.
Yeah.
So what's next on the agenda?
More odds and ends.
Oh, we are on odds and ends.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
We've been doing odds and ends for like 20 minutes.
Have we?
No. I have.
So they spent a lot of time, the Breen Gambit, they spent an awful lot of time sort of casually chatting about their meeting with the pirates and the effects.
It sounds
And the effects Gambit. And so forth when they had about 20 seconds to do what was effectively diving under a wave at a beach. That's basically what they did, right?
They classic bodyboarding maneuver.
Yeah, but they spent a lot of time sort of
it was gnarly.
See, this thing's going to come at them. It was totally tubular. It was coming at them, and they're basically like, why do you think this will work? Well, let me tell you one day about these. No. Of course, that's nothing new to Star Trek, but it's just kind of like
exposition. They gave it a cool name, like the Breen Gambit.
Yeah. You know, it was meant to be cute and show you, you know, the relationship they had, but it was kind of funny that they took so much. It's like, why does she say, like, I'll tell you afterwards, you know? But of course, that wouldn't have been as cool. But, you know, classic Data looking at the camera while the, what was the episode where the shit was coming at him and Data was like, Captain, I believe that if we blah, blah, blah. And meanwhile, this giant monster.
It's cause and effect. cause and effect. That's a really.
We did that one.
But the funny yeah, thing is in that scene, there's still tension because you actually see the thing behind yeah, him. And it's right. Getting, the ship is really getting closer yeah, and closer yeah, and closer.
That's so a good point.
Data, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, that's a good point. There was, oh, speaking of closely, the, what's it? The profile shot. Where you see a profile shot between Burnham's shuttle and Book's ship with them talking and talking inside at each other. I thought that was a neat shot.
It was pretty.
Mm. Because it was one of those shots that Discovery hasn't done as much. And maybe I can see why, because sometimes they went a little overboard with the crazy camera stuff. But one thing I liked about that is it really gave you a sense of scale.
Yes.
And that's what I really liked. And I liked that. That's what I liked about that. And I wish there was... Now on the other
sort of the architecture of their time now is like the super open, like lots of windows, like
very Scandinavian.
All the ships have like this super huge view screen area.
There, yeah. What was that view screen? What was that? That sort of brings it to the other sort of effect they did, which I didn't really know how to interpret. It was near the beginning of the episode when they zoomed in on the cloaked Discovery and then went zoop, 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 and suddenly the view, you're speaking a big view screen. You see like this giant view screen, which is a look inside of the bridge. And it was a weird sort of effect. It's like, I didn't understand what was happening.
Because they were going through the cloak is what it was.
It was just going through the cloak.
They had to come up with a clever...
Like the glooby space.
Yeah, I knew something was happening, but I couldn't figure it out.
Yeah, they were cloak ship, and they were doing a classic zoom into the bridge through the view screen action, except through a cloaking device. Yeah,
okay. So. But that was a big old window-looking thing. Or I don't know, was it a window, or was it simply just making it look transparent?
I think both, in Discovery's case.
Yeah.
I think it's both a window and a view screen, and... We've had discussions in the past about the utility of having a giant window on a spaceship,
yeah.
As opposed to, say, the Expanse style, where there are no windows whatsoever and everything's just monitors.
But they still have guns.
They have fucking rail guns and shit that go through the actual ship and fucking take your head
projectile
off. I love that idea. You can get get fucking killed. Your head could get blown up inside a ship. It's
probably a good way to go, all things considered.
Yeah,
rail gun, ideal way to go.
Yeah. So, Prodigy, doesn't Prodigy have like a big window on their,
they do.
Yeah. The Prodigy's actually got a lot better as it went on.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to check that out.
I highly recommend watching Prodigy.
Yeah.
For real.
The first episodes are like a little too Star Wars-y. It quickly starts to settle into more Star Trek-y.
It's like they're doing a bait and switch or something.
And by the end of that first 10 episode run, it's like straight up interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting storytelling. Definitely geared towards kids, but in a pretty mature way, I'd say.
Yeah, I think so.
I get upset in some of the things that happen in some of those later episodes of Prodigy.
So. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah, there's some sad, sort of disturbing kind of and stick with you shit.
And some triumphant stuff too.
Yeah.
Like that with that little cat, little Cation creature.
Yeah. Yeah, the cute kitty.
Young Cation.
Cute
all right.
Kitty.
Odds and ends, other odds and ends.
I got a couple more if anyone wants, but okay. So okay.
Tarka and Book go through, they're like hiding in the intestines of a planet.
Oh yeah.
It really
right.
looked to me when they're flying through it, it just looked like it was a colonoscopy.
Yeah. Tryptophobia.
Is it tryptophobia?
Trypophobia, fear of tripe.
Trypophobia, no, fear of holes.
Yeah. There was a lot of holes going on. No one's scared of him. Everyone is.
Nobody's scared.
They would be scared of him if he were in a bad mood, but they would secretly know that he was only there to protect him. So that's why they wouldn't be scared of him.
Trip and Reed are starting a podcast. I think it starts the day after this podcast comes out.
See, what are you doing over there?
You hear that? Trip and Reed are starting a podcast.
What are you doing?
You can't. What are you doing?
I think it's called the Shuttle Pod. I think it's called the Shuttle Pod. Podcast or something, or the Shuttle Pod Show.
Is it? It's a new podcast.
It's a new podcast.
They didn't have
Charles Trip Tucker III, and what's his name? Stephen Reed.
Stephen Reed.
Malcolm.
Right now it's Malcolm.
Stephen Reed. Yeah. Why not?
I'm Steve Reed.
That's interesting that they're starting a podcast. I would listen to that podcast.
And Robert Duncan McNeil and Garrett Wang also have a podcast. Called the Delta Flyer Podcast.
Of course.
Where they gossip a lot about the behind the scenes, talking about Voyager episodes.
Now that's pretty cool, too.
Nerds.
Nerds.
is.
So Burnham's catchphrase is,
Let's fly. She said it all sad.
Yeah, it was like...
It was great.
It was like, who's sad when they're flying, you know?
Yeah, but it's our catchphrase. It's like...
Yeah, right.
It's like with Picard has to, you know, to his nephew and his brother's funeral.
Yeah.
And he's like, engage.
Engage, right.
Engage.
Right. It's funny because that's
her... Let's fly.
It's funny because it's her catchphrase. Yeah, right. It makes them... we're talking about flying here, and she sounds all sad.
Yes.
You know the only person is who's sad that they're flying?
Oh, this is a setup to a joke. I'm sorry. I didn't realize that.
It's not a setup to a joke.
Okay.
It's just a cultural reference.
Got it. Okay.
I thought you were going to do a joke.
Don't worry. He's getting to it. He's just giving me a hard time.
No, it's a pop.
Calling him out on it.
No, it's a pop culture reference. It
like
wasn't
a
even
Wright
a
jo- Brothers
See,
joke.
The problem is when you call me out is that I'm not making a joke, and so now you're going to be disappointed. You're just setting me up for failure.
The problem is it messes up your joke.
No, it doesn't. It's not a joke.
Okay, tell the not
Not
joke.
Anymore.
Tell the not joke.
Do you know who else is sad when they're flying?
Else is sad when they're flying?
What are you doing?
You're asking me a question. Is it rhetorical? I'm not meant to respond?
I'll tell you who, though.
Okay.
It's Strong Sad from Strong Bad.
Okay.
Homestar right. Runner.
Yeah.
There's right. a part Strong where he, there's a guy, he has a scene where he goes, I'm sad that I'm flying.
Oh, no.
So, yeah.
I'll count that as not a joke.
That was way
given
obscure.
Given that the reference is obscure enough as to not be comprehensible by the majority of people.
Yeah, I kick you nine times. Explanation was necessary. Right. Yeah. Jesse knows.
I think many people will know.
Yeah.
But it's.
I hope they do.
Not like an everyday.
But it was set up like it was a joke.
Sort of thing. All right.
So I can understand the confusion on your part.
The never-ending soda.
I can understand how you fucked it up. Thresh Tor Kashyyyk Meditation. Thresh Tor Kashyyyk Meditation. Thresh Tor Mishtyyyk Meditation.
Okay. Super VGA.
Super VGA. That's what Saru and Tarina did on Navar. They did the Thresh Tor Kashyyyk Meditation.
Yeah, but it didn't work out because he's still agitated. And so she told him to sort of walk around or maybe go on a date.
Go
on a date. I like that. I thought the soundscapes in this episode were particularly good.
Eat some breadsticks with a fork.
Discovery is really good with music and background effects and sort of the musical effects. But for this episode stood out to me a little bit. There was lots of good evil synths and horns
evil
and
synth.
Stuff crashing together and sort of that discordant synth. I dig a discordant synth, if you know what I mean, right?
Not like the first season TNG synths that were all just kind of clownish.
No,
like,
those were not
like
discordant.
New wave.
What about
something.
The third season?
They got better.
They got better.
But they also got
third
a full
season's
orchestra.
Happening.
Well, the third season's when TNG got a full orchestra.
Yeah,
but there's all these more like interesting.
They
like,
do use. Yeah, they got.
Do you think that was what it was? Is they just didn't have the money to have a full orchestra back then? Or
yeah,
they or just, was that or, the, was that the sound they were looking for?
I don't know. Didn't have, didn't want to, but
you got to pay all those dudes.
It's expensive to have a full orchestra.
But why they change?
It's like union.
You go, yeah, but why did they change?
Because they
their
were
mind?
Making. Because they're making money, and
making money.
Once you make money,
that's what I'm saying.
You invest in the product.
My question was: was it done because did they have first season synths like that because they chose to go for that sort of style, or were they just didn't have enough money to get an orchestra and they wanted an orchestra all along?
The problem is these are the kinds of things that are difficult to know. It's kind of like that conspiracy theory that says that Discovery was actually canceled after season two.
Oh, yeah.
But that Q from QAnon made a deal with Paramount to continue to produce fake episodes of Discovery.
From QAnon?
They're all fake.
Q from QAnon. To distract, he wanted more episodes of Star Trek Discovery in order to distract the woke liberals from Trump's secret plan to retake the White House.
Are you telling me that we've been doing podcasts on fake episodes?
Yeah, so apparently everything from season two
should not be. Are you talking about John
DeLancey? No. You know QAnon?
I know QAnon.
No, not Q.
But you said Q. I thought you meant John DeLancey was in QAnon.
In the case of this particular anecdote, it is a mere coincidence that there's a character named Q in Star Trek, and simultaneously a real life character named Q who's doing his QAnon whatever.
So people have actually talked about this, that it was brought back because they were trying to like distract the liberals or something.
I'm hoping people start saying that after after I've just invented this idea at this moment.
Okay, yeah.
But it was a comparison to the fact that, you know, we don't have enough information to know either way.
Well, George Lucas...
whether or not
we don't have enough information to take either way.
Yeah, we just don't know either way.
George, we don't know any other way. Hey, Willie, I don't know. Get me some cat. But But unlike George Lucas, who said that the reason the original trilogy of Star Wars was the way it was is because
he said Star Wars.
Star Wars Star was the way it was. He said he didn't have enough money.
Excuse me.
He said that the didn't he say that Star Wars would be more like the prequels had he had that kind of money back then? And
George Lucas says
yeah,
a bunch
he was of, a
he,
son
says
of a bitch.
He says a bunch of made up bullshit. Yeah, it's always different. You don't gotta pay any attention to that guy.
Speaking of Star Wars,
he's
when,
a crackpot.
When they're talking about slipping into the maintenance hatch. Discovery, they were talking about how they were going to get into the book ship through the maintenance hatch. That kind of reminded me of how, like, Star Wars and they blew up the exhaust shaft.
Why don't they have Jeffries?
It reminded me more of Spaceballs when the Winnebago when the
goes in the ear.
No, it can. Well, yeah, but then it docks. You know, and it was similar. It was a similar plot line. You know,
it went into the giant ship's
ear. Yeah,
and then
they climbed a ladder down into it.
Not yeah, in here, buddy.
Wasn't
this
it in her? It was up her nose or in her ear.
I
or
think
something.
In the ear, in the Spaceballs context. If you haven't seen Spaceballs out there, members
Stop
of the audience,
my can.
Watch it. You don't have you can fast forward through all the parts with Dot Matrix, but
brutal.
The rest of it, you can
brutal.
Watch.
Jesse was saying something about Jeffries tubes. I don't think Book Shift has Jeffries tubes.
But why doesn't it have Jeffries?
Because it doesn't need them.
They don't need it.
Because they can just warp through. Man,
they can flip it all
around. Goddamn the future.
Goddamn the future.
Oh, the other, another odd and end I wanted to mention was that for some reason, inexplicably to me, the shuttle computer voice was all like, protective shielding deployed.
Yeah.
it was like a goofy male voice instead of their normal computer voice. I guess, you know, because they're now Zora, I guess, is the
it's
ship's
Zora,
computer. So the ships,
yeah.
The shuttles aren't going to be Zora. Maybe they want to differentiate it. That's why it's male. But why does it have to be like protective shields are deployed?
That sounds like when Windows first came out and I learned how to set like sound files to different things. Then you open Windows, it's like, welcome, Dan, to your computer.
Welcome, Dan.
Well,
to your computer.
It's interesting you say that. I think the voice who played this is Pietor Michel. It's Piotr and then Michael. Peter Michael. He's a shuttle computer voice. So now, I guess Zora doesn't do double duty anymore. Duty above all, double duty. Duty above all, double duty.
We're coming in for a landing.
Yeah.
Shields up.
Wasn't Casey Kasem in Scooby-Doo or something?
LeBron.
He played Shaggy.
Dysfunctional.
Yeah.
Impulse drive. Offline.
So one part, it seemed like the writers were kind of almost laughing at themselves, was the exchange between Burnham and Stamets when Burnham goes, check my logic here. If you needed something, you wouldn't stop until you got it, right? Or at least until you had no choice but to move on and look somewhere else for it. And
Stamets
then Stamets
like,
goes,
what the fuck are you talking
goes,
about?
I have no idea what you're talking about. And then she goes, Boronite. He's like, Boronite. Yes, of course. Boronite.
The Omega Particle.
But every time that somebody says Boronite, somebody else says Boronite, of course.
Yeah, exactly. And it was funny because like, Burnham was trying to say something to Stamets, and as an audience member, we were supposed to get, she was making some analogy, but it didn't make a ton of sense at the moment. It's like, I guess I can look at that and try to figure out what you're saying, but it doesn't sound like you're saying anything. But Stamets totally called her on it. So it was like, what the fuck was that?
It was weird, but I also enjoyed it.
Yeah, I did too.
There's a lot of really good bits.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
All throughout.
Yeah, because when Stamets was talking about, like, you know, she was like, Burnham was like, push buttons faster. And he was blah, blah, blah. You know, he was like, do you...
He was like, is any answer other than yes acceptable? And she said no. And he's like, all right, then yes.
Yeah, and he did a little thing with his finger. Yeah. He's like, okay. Okay. That's pretty cool. I liked it.
All right.
He was like working on like those like future control things all like awkwardly.
And similar to later with Tarka, also has it's a slightly different setup version on Bookship, but it's also all 3D, gooby globby,
gooby
particles.
Gooby globby, gooby globby.
Okay, final odds and ends.
Final
odds and
that's
ends.
That's it.
This is kind of a weak one to end on, but I noticed that.
Perfect.
It was.
Perfect. People love that shit.
Yeah. Why even bother, Dan? You missed your chance. Just accept it.
No, go for it.
When Nan goes, my orders were to let you carry out this tactical operation without intervening. If it failed, I was to give you this briefing. That's right when she was about to tell them the shit that they knew. And it showed the shot of Burnham. She looked kind of suspicious, like, what? And then you shot to Saru, and Saru was like...
Saru.
Saru!
He, his face was like, he knew what was coming. He knew what she was about to say. If you look at his face, yeah, he was like, he can read people.
He's by the book.
Burnham was just kind of like, something's shady here. And Saru was like, I know what she's going to tell us. She's going to tell us that they want to blow the fuck up this fucking ship. You know?
Saru knows the Starfleet manual. And
yeah, he probably read it like a bunch of times.
Burnham's a maverick.
Main thing that annoyed me about that was like, why wouldn't you... Just explain this earlier. You don't have to. Like, you don't have to wait for this scenario,
right?
You can explain this like straight away and be like, "Oh, by the way, we can totally. We're pretty sure we can just blow this motherfucker out of the sky right away. So that's an option.
Yeah,
you should know that option right here because guess what? You might not have more than 2 seconds to make that decision.
Yeah, that was weird. And Nan was all the one talking about how she didn't want to wait. Hesitate too much because it fucked up her logic.
But it was an artificial stretching of the drama. They needed another drama beat. Sometimes it comes off a little artificial.
So she did end up hesitating again like she did last time, but I don't think it was done really on purpose.
She seemed to have been ordered to wait until their first attempt didn't work. And I guess real quick, what do you think about their initial plan? Was it a reasonable plan? Go board the ship? It didn't work out because of the booby trap that Tarkus set. But
it was a totally like Discovery style plan. We'll get Dr. Hugh to like reason with you.
Right. Yeah. That was like their plan was just we think Dr. Culber's just going to say some shit.
It's like if Badira was here, we'd bring them along.
Like. Yeah. And then with Bryce and Reese, it was like while Culber is trying to talk to Book, like Bryce and Reese are going to scuttle around and do some shady shit, I guess was the implication.
Yeah, right.
You know, and I don't know. I find it's the idea of successfully boarding a ship that can blink away in an instant with a spore drive.
Yes.
It's not, it's like maybe that's the option. Maybe that's what you got to do, but it's kind of the time where I'm like, if I have an option just to blow these people up and not bother, and understanding that that's not the story they're trying to tell, that's not the story we'd want to see either. Right. So,
but sometimes things, you there's only so much suspension of disbelief.
You always have to suspend disbelief a certain amount, but ideally it's nice when they give you enough of a reason to overcome that ridiculousness. Mm-hmm. And you, again, through technobabble, through a clever plot point, through clever combinations of characterization, when they can do it, it's great. You can't always do it. I can't come up with anything better, so you can't complain too much. But it stands out sometimes as a little bit artificial in how these beats are paced out.
Man, when you brought up the idea of them, jumping away, like what if they jumped away while they were on the fucking trying to break in? What the fuck happens?
And does it go with them or not?
Yeah. How did they even get in there past the shields?
When you transport, why don't you get naked every time?
Yeah.
Knows what to transport.
Well, because they have those Xenothon bio uniforms that we've learned from the animated series.
I used to have a Zenith TV.
Yeah, me too.
Pretty good.
It's all right.
All right.
But wait, did they talk about how they were going to get through their shield to get to that exhaust hatch?
I think our understanding was that's by connecting physically somehow that was fine. I don't know. Can't be bothered to worry about it too much.
So how does that work when you're outside the ship but inside the shield when you're warping?
I don't know.
And jumping?
I don't know.
Same.
Maybe they'll explain that at some point.
Don't even worry about it.
Three Star Trek series in the future after people are aggravated about it for enough years, they'll retcon it with some clever line.
Yeah.
All right, that's it.
Better to ask for forgiveness.
This episode, next episode will be whatever they decide to call.
Maybe it'll be a better episode.
Episode 10.
I did enjoy this episode.
It was fun. I think the next episode will be more interesting.
Discovery is cool, man.
I saw the preview, and you can even guess. You can't tell much from the preview, but you can guess a little bit where this is going, and there's some opportunity for
seeing
some,
that DMA some, was pretty awesome.
Yeah. The special effects production value, really, really cool.
That's some galactic shit.
And they've been developing a style, like a Star Trek version of a little bit more action and dynamism, but still kind of, you know, the Star Trek version of it. So that's cool. So anyway, next week, episode 10 of Discovery.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Talk about that. In the meantime, tell your clergy and family and even family like
to stop paying too much for mattresses.
Your distant family, you might have distant family,
cousins and your cousins.
Tell them
cousins.
All about the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Say it's not your normal podcast.
pay them money.
It's extra normal. Your skills are extraordinary.
Pay them money to give them $5 and say, I'll give you $5 if you listen to it and provide a little report back on it, rate and review and all that stuff.
How about $20?
Yeah, you know, we could do that. We do this for free. Minus, of course, not counting our contribution from Big Star Trek, which
Big Star Trek.
We don't really count because we're registered as a non-profit.
We're not allowed
non-profit.
To talk about.
It's a non-profit, but we are in their pockets.
Setup. Yeah. It's a whole thing. But anyway, so yes, tell your friends
We've
and family.
Said two.
Subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts and Spotify, if people still use that, and Stitcher.
Snorkalords.
And you can go to the website, www.itsgotstartrek.com.
Snibbity-bops.
You can go to social media, like Twitter and Instagram and all that business, at It's Got Star Trek. And
Skips
we're on Facebook. And YouTube, at, you know, just type in the It's Got Star Trek. You'll find all that stuff. And
are we on Vimeo?
We are not on Vimeo.
We're not on Vimeo.
It's perhaps an oversight.
Isn't that owned by Google now or something?
I don't know. We're not on Vimeo. We're not on Twitch.
We don't have a Patreon.
We're not on TikTok yet. If you're listening in the future, maybe we're on TikTok by that point in time. Or maybe TikTok is stupid at that. Who knows? I don't know.
Maybe TikTok is stupid in the future.
I mean, it might be stupid now. Maybe that's why we're not on it.
Maybe it is.
Maybe it's super cool. Write in and tell us if we should be on TikTok, and we'll get right on that. Until then, until next week, have a good one, and we'll talk to you later.
Hickory dickory dock.
Bye-bye.
You said that like a phone. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Stamets, where are we with that Borg Knight timetable?
We're working as fast as we can. We're crunching gigaquads of raw data.
Can you crunch faster?
Is there an acceptable answer other than yes?
No.
Then yes.